You may have seen some protests done by Blockade Australia in some capital cities by disrupting traffic to raise awareness about climate action. According to research, Australia has hosted more than 50,000 environmental actions since 2010. But despite a huge public desire for action on the current climate crisis, governments are cracking down on peaceful protests. The Wire's contributor from RTRFM, Alan Boyd, started asking postdoctoral research fellow from the University of Queensland, Dr. Robin Goliba, to explain how Blockade Australia started.
Part of my research, I have looked at protests in Australia in general, environmental and climate protests, and also the civil resistance side of it. And perhaps it's interesting, but civil resistance is not just disruptive protests. It also involves marches and rallies and more traditional forms, I guess, of protest. So Blockade Australia has come out of the Extinction Rebellion emergence back in about 2018, 2019. And then they also kind of have split off in the way that many, many groups in the environmental movement do. So we have a very rich and diverse environmental movement in Australia, and that diversity is shown by these groups like Fireproof and Blockade Australia that are emerging at the moment.
Yeah, this form of protest can be writing a letter to your local member. That can be the start of a protest, can't it? Right through to disrupting traffic and further.
The data that we collected on the environmental movement in Australia, we looked at now 55,000 different events that environmental groups have held between 2010 and 2022.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, civil resistance, very small proportion. So rallies, marches, sit-ins, gluing yourself to the road, those sorts of things would be less than 1% of all forms of protest in Australia. By far and away, the most prevalent form of protest that environmentalists are using in Australia is what we call information sharing. So having a film screening about the Adani coal mine, for example, or organising a candidates forum with politicians. So, yeah, there's actually heaps and heaps going on that you will never hear about.
No, it's those that look good on TV that seem to make it to our news feeds because
exactly,
they're
exactly, yeah. That's completely understandable too, right? Because right now, as you're listening to us talking on the radio station, in my head, I kind of see 1,000 activists all writing to their MPs or organising a film screening night. That's not really very media worthy, is it?
No.
You know, you're just not going to report on that kind of stuff. But of course, these really, really dramatic, disruptive protests do generate huge amounts of media attention. And that is often sometimes the point of the protest. So if you look at Blockade Australia, for example, they're very clear on their website, the goals, the aims they have for the protest. And one of those goals is to highlight in action the fact that we know that things are so bad. We know what needs to be done. All of the main institutions around the world are saying what needs to be done, and yet we're not doing it. So part of the goal for Blockade Australia is actually highlighting that in action and getting really, really large volumes of media attention is potentially a really successful way to highlight in action.
Whilst they're dramatic and they look great on TV, there's quite a divisive effect they do have, and some people you talk to just think that they're idiots. Certainly given lots of different names, despite the impact that has.
Where it's this is where it's helpful to look more closely about how we actually try to criminalise these types of protests. So yes, it is disruptive, and yes, it does really affect people, particularly those who are stopped in traffic, for example, and have important places to go. But there's three different ways in which we criminalise people. We don't just criminalise them by these laws and legislation. First of all, we try to make the behaviours that the protesters are engaging in, we try to make them offences, so then attracting criminal sanctions like the going to jail or big fines. That's one way. But there's another way that we actually target everybody involved in those protests, not just the people who might be chaining themselves to cars, for example. And that's through expansionary mechanisms. So this is where police might have discretion to use move-on orders.
Right.
They might be able to say, in this piece of public square, you're not allowed to go there. That's their discretionary right to do that. Corporations use it as well by targeting lawsuits, for example, against one activist against the Carmichael coal mine and the Galilee blockade. And then also you can see it through excessive fines against protesters, for example. But the third way that we criminalise protesters is through the way we talk about them. And when you kind of other them, you say, these people are affecting my life and it's really negative and they're bad people and what they're doing is dumb, they're stupid, they're idiots. All of these words we've actually seen. So this is called rhetorical framing.
That was postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Queensland, Dr. Robin Golliver, ending the story from RTRFM's Alan Boyd in Perth.